When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
Hello. I'm so glad you could join us. I hope you brought your blanket to hide under. The spooky crew is going to discuss things and events from other realms. Ghosts, cryptids, aliens. Be sure to hold your blanket extra tight as the boys take you deep into the Fearscape.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another frightening but cool episode of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast here. With me is my co-host, which we'll get to in a second, because my name is Stefan Gearhart, your host for the evening. And like I said, I am joined once again by my virtual reality co-host and man with the most attractive nostrils I've ever seen in my entire life, Mr. Josh Rutledge.
Why, thank you. I actually have one nostril larger than the other, and Kristen told the girls it was because I've used my thumb to pick my nose before, and it made it bigger.
Yeah. You're a thumber. That's what I heard, for sure. No, we've got a really sweet-ass episode. I just want to say that. We are doing a Getting Spooky episode with one of the actors from Walking Dead and Nashville, Santiago Cirillo, and he is just super cool. I cannot wait for you guys to hear this interview with him. It was an absolute blast. That's all I'm gonna say. Yeah. We had an absolute blast with him, and we're gonna get with that. He's a friend of Keith Ages. Keith hooked us up again. But not only is he an actor that was on Walking Dead, which is one of the coolest shows ever, but he's also a paranormal himself. He's been on many ghost hunts. He's psychically gifted. Yep. And my God, this guy, he's everything.
He
is the total package. I can see why Keith took him under his wing like he did with us. Yep. But before we get into that, I want to get into our psychic word of the week from the Cyclopedic Psychic Dictionary. This week, the phrase that I have for you is symbiotic closeness. Okay. So what this says is that this is a spontaneous, short psychic contact from a deceased person to an earthling for personal reasons. Contact is usually to assure the earthling that the deceased person is alive and still a friend. Occurs by a psychic vision or smelling a fragrance or tasting a food that can be associated with the friend, but not associated with anything in the vicinity. Earthling is in a relaxed state to perceive the contact. So that reminds me a lot of what you were talking about with your granddaddy, how you could smell his pack of, or his particular brand of cigarettes. And you don't have cigarettes in the house.
That's correct. And to my knowledge, I don't think the people that lived there before us smoked either. The other thing that I caught there that I thought was an odd placement is the use of the term earthling.
I noticed that too.
which almost makes you wonder, is there anywhere else in the book that makes the distinction of non-earthling that they have that they felt the need to use earthling in that definition.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about some other things before, and it spoke about contact. It didn't really say earthling. It usually says contact. And so, but I mean, this definitely says that someone is deceased. And, you know, it gives a reference of other words, and it says emotional PSI or discarnate experience during sleep. So I don't know. I find that very interesting that she chose those words as well, as if, like the movie Cocoon, they went somewhere else, right?
Well, or what I immediately thought of is that maybe you had a connection, that reached out, and that connection was not an earthling.
Hmm.
Like, you know, again, kind of along the lines of your Cocoon statement, what if a great friend of yours is not human, not an earthling, and so the connection is made back to an earthling? I don't know. I'm probably reaching on this one, but
no, I don't know. I'm kind of with you, man.
It's kind of like the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still, the one with Keanu Reeves, and I'm only using this as a reference because I can't remember if it occurred in the first movie, in the first
right
era, you know, the original, is the at one point in time Keanu Reeves, his character Klaatu, meets up with another of his species, another of his race,
right,
who has been living on Earth, kind of gathering information, and so it makes me wonder if there are quote unquote you know, alien spies, if you will, living amongst us. If you were to befriend one of them and they died, would they, you know, potentially reconnect with you psychically? That would be the distinction there between them not being an earthling and you being an earthling.
Interesting.
I feel like you're not listening to me. I feel like you're like reading a book or something.
No, I'm looking up other things in this to see, like you said, do they refer to them as earthlings? And she does not, though, because I'm looking up all the clairs, like the clairvoyance, clairaudient, clairsentient, and things like that. But she does refer to them as being able to tap into like a vibrational frequency, she says, either within the head or in outer space.
Well, see, here's something that just clicked with me around all this. So in our Ingrid Cold episode with Santosh, we talked about, and I can't remember if we did it in the episode or if this was a conversation that the three of us had post-episode, but I think the three of us were talking about the ability to, if Ingrid really is dead and if he had a soul, could you connect with that soul on the psychic plane?
Right.
And so to me, this feels very fate, purpose type. We were meant to read this particular word today because it has relevancy to the things that we're experiencing right now. This would be a situation where Ingrid, presumably not an earthling per se, or maybe originally was an earthling but has become something else, could contact us in passing,
yeah,
to convey some, you know, some connection.
Yeah. Again, I looked up medium, and she definitely talks about the etheric world as to where the intelligences are, but she does not refer to the medium themselves as a earthling. So very interesting. So symbiotic contact. And it's interesting because symbiotic, you know, implies that it's
a two-way relationship.
Yeah, it's a two-way relationship. So I find that very, very interesting. Something to think about if you smell that cigarette smoke again.
Yeah.
You know, because I, you know, it implies that that was used for you specifically because that's the trigger for you of your granddaddy.
Right.
Like that's what he's using to trigger you, to let you know he's there.
Right. Yep.
So,
and oddly enough, I smelled it today.
You know, it's interesting because I do that. And I don't know how much of this is psychic, but it's like every time I smell classic Dial soap, especially the liquid, the regular orange Dial soap.
Yep.
an image of my grandmother, because that's the soap she always had, like, I immediately think of her. So, and it's a good smell for me. So, but yeah, I don't want to dwell on that.
But yeah, so that was the so again, a lot of these things that come up seem to come up in line with the journey that we're on, right?
What's interesting, Josh, is that I actually, you know, when I do this, I just flip and I flip and then I kind of wait to see something grab my eye. And what's interesting is that two phrases grabbed my eye. And I'm going to read the other one. And it's actually the one right before symbiotic closeness, because, you know, you were just saying sometimes these pop up and they are connected to the things. And well, this is connected to the thing because it's kind of the thing I just told you about last week. And it's the silver cord. And what this says is that the silver cord is an ethereal cobweb-like cable which contains an abundance of intelligence and energy, and has the properties of elasticity, extends from the sushumna in the human spine to the human being seed, the monad, serves as a person's connecting link to the universe, making both all one unit, penetrates through one's ethereal bodies, connects the soul mind to the physical body during an astral projection, and at this time can be seen clairvoyantly coming out of the top of the head, a vital energy source composed of five tiny strands, each with a separate function necessary to sustain the physical body, which exists to perfect the human being seed. Also known as the spiritual cord in astral projection. So it's interesting that I just mentioned that to you, and it was the one right before. So yeah, that's why I felt like
another little coincidence here for you. So I had always imagined the cord kind of being more like at the waist level, like almost like, you know, if you're you know, spelunking or something, you know, you've got your harness at your waist level,
or almost like an umbilical cord,
right? But the way that you just read that, it seems like it comes out of the top of your head.
Yeah, and it's funny that she said at this time, as if it changes, it evolves.
Well, so what's really interesting is last night, as I was kind of preparing and getting ready to try to astral project, in my mind, with my eyes closed against my mind's eye, I kept seeing these waves of energy move up and then kind of exit out of the top of my vision towards the top of my head.
Hmm. Interesting. So
again, yeah.
And so then what does that have to do with, you know, does it have anything to do with the crown chakra or the third eye? You know, yeah. I don't know. Very interesting. This book was written in 1986. So I don't know if things have evolved since then, though. I do know that Santosh once said that our idea of the chakras has completely evolved. And he doesn't believe the Western version of the chakras. He learned the more, you know, yogic version, in which there are many. Very, very interesting. He said that it has evolved and shifted as well. So very interesting, something to look into. But I want to move out of that. I want to get into our spooky news because it involves everybody's favorite band, the Foo Fighters. All right, so the story that I have for you this week on Spooky News is actually shown up on a couple different things, but the one I pulled is from loudwire.com, good rock and roll kind of music website. But this has been popping up all over the place. The headline reads, "The Foo Fighters were taunted by ghosts while recording their new album." So so this says that this is good news for Foo Fighter fans. It says, last month, Dave Grohl confirmed that the Foo Fighters have finished working on their 10th studio album, but the process didn't come without its hurdles. Apparently, the band had some company in the house they had rented, and we call them ghosts. The rockers stayed in a house in Encino, California. This was built in the 1940s to work on their follow-up to 2017's Concrete and Gold. And while they were there, unusual occurrences started happening. I wish they had just set a house in California, because then I would have been like, oh my God, is that Jennifer Bear's house? Like the San Jose house? But no, it's in Encino. Let's see here. When we walked into the house in Encino, I knew the vibes were definitely off. but the sound was effing on, the frontman described of the experiences to Mojo. When they'd returned to the studio the next day, the guitars were detuned, settings on the board hadn't been changed, and Pro Tools even had missing or mysterious new tracks. Grohl said there were some tracks that were put on there that we did not put on there. But just like weird open mic noises, nobody playing on an instrument or anything like that, just an open mic recording a room.
Wow.
Eventually, they installed baby monitors to see if they could gather any visual evidence of what was causing the disturbances. And while they didn't find anything at first, they later began to see things that they could not explain. Grohl continued, he said, when we found out the history of the house, I had to sign a freaking non-disclosure agreement with the landlord because he's trying to sell the place. So I can't give away what happened there in the past, but these multiple occurrences over a short period of time made us finish the album as quickly as we could. And that works for all of us, right? The yeah. Foo Fighters recently called off their 25th anniversary tour due to the coronavirus, but hopefully we should have this album coming out in the next year. So
that's pretty awesome. I would imagine that happens quite a bit for bands, and they probably just don't pay much attention to it.
Oh yeah, you know, there's a one of the topics on our list that I want us to do is a recording studio called The Mansion. And it is filled. They have tons of stories. Apparently it's like one of the most haunted recording studios there is. But yeah, that one's on there. As well as, you know, the story of the roller coaster of love, that when they were recording, down below them, they were up on the third floor of this building. On the second floor, a woman was murdered while they were recording. And this is true. It's all been verified. And you can hear, to this day, you can still hear the woman screaming, a blood-curdled scream. And if you know where to look for it, you can hear it bright as just bright as the sky, dude, like this woman screaming. And she was being murdered down below. And so that was recorded for people, and it's like, God, what kind of psychic energy is there, because it was being recorded as well.
Exactly. I mean, it's forever frozen in that song.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like I can't listen to the song anymore because it creeps me out. Because I wonder
if, you know, and I don't want to necessarily deter anyone from listening to the song, but I wonder if you happen to listen to the song and play that part, if it would attract any energy.
Or if you're in that home, you know, where that happened. I don't know.
Right.
But yeah, that's our spooky news for the week. So thank you, Dave Grohl, for sharing your story with Mojo and Loudwire covering that. And let's go ahead and move right into some exciting creepy catch-up.
Creepy catch-up. Creepy catch-up. Creepy catch-up. Creepy catch-up. Y'all, it's creepy.
So, Josh, we have some exciting creepy catch-up. You know, we have not been able to meet due to the coronavirus, but what we have been able to do is meet outside, outdoors. And so we met this past Sunday, and I'm going to let you share the story of it. I'm going to give you the setup here. We met this past Sunday to meet up. We were going to do a Fearscape Unhinged outside by the fire and all kinds of stuff like that, but that didn't happen due to the wind advisory. So yep. We decided to meet at a cemetery, which actually we talked about last week that we were talking about we were going to do that. We did. We met at the cemetery on Hot Rod Haven, and we did an Estes method an Estes method session for the both of us, and that was pretty cool. But it was what happened after we left there and decided to go out to Waverly Park, which is a place where, if people remember, I had my dream about, where I saw you as the Mothman and as Indrid Cold. So, but what is it that we saw, Josh?
Yeah, so we were, you know, I think that we, you know, of course we got out there, we're staring up at the stars as we like to do, Found Capella because Capella was moving for us a couple of weeks back. We decided to try something that I don't think anybody had ever done before, and that was to do a double Estus session.
Right, because I had an idea while we were doing yours.
At the cemetery.
Yeah, what if these weren't... What if these weren't questions or answers to questions, but they were messages? And what if we did them at the same time? Would they link up if we had two voices or three?
Right. So, yeah. So we both put, you know, headsets on, and I had the SB7 box, and then you had your, the app on your phone that allowed you to, you know, to tune and cycle through radio stations. And so, you know, we were doing those Estus sessions, and I think you had set a timer on your watch for like 20 minutes or something like that, and then you were going to wake us up. So we started it, or not wake us up, but bring us out. So we started at 9:25.
Right.
And 20 minutes later, after we run through and recorded the audio of everything, your timer went off. You kind of, you know, you reached over and you tapped me on the leg, and I can't, you know, so you happen to look up at the night sky and you see something moving, like, you're like, Josh, that's moving, look up. So we both, you know, like, look up and see these lights moving.
Right. At first we just saw the one, and I thought, well, maybe it was the International Space Station. Right.
But I mean, it was moving northwest to southeast.
Mm-hmm.
At like 90 degrees from our position. So when you think about the Earth's sky, 90 degrees is directly, you know, kind of overhead and directly in front of you. 0 degrees is on the horizon. And then 45 degrees is about, you know, if you're any good at geometry, 45 degrees is split the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So these things were moving at 90 degrees directly at our position, moving northwest to southeast.
Well, yeah, it's like I saw that one. And then I saw it like disappear 90 degrees above us.
Right.
And then I was like, okay, get out. And then we saw another one. And then we saw another one. And yep. Then we saw another one. And another one.
We saw a total of seven at that point, all kind of evenly spaced. And again, when they reached the zenith, if you will, so directly above us, they disappeared. And what was really interesting is like, I remember I turned around to face southeast and waited for them to reappear, and they never came out of the zenith, right? So you would think that they would have reached an arc point and then they would have continued on southeast. And that was actually evident with the when we saw the International Space Station,
which
just
came
a few seconds later,
from,
which came north to south across the sky at like 72 or something like that, like 70 degrees across the sky, and we tracked it from the time that it entered our view until the time that we could no longer see it. So
it went completely across the sky from one horizon to the other. We watched it, and so, it crossed the same intersection almost where the UFOs disappeared.
Right.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
And we were able to pull up, you know, did the ISS trek, you know, across our space? Were we able to see it? And we were able to show that was, in fact, the ISS.
Right. Because we wondered, was that the ISS? Because, you know, what are we seeing? We also wondered if it was the Starlink train.
Right.
Which we had talked about before, which is Elon Musk's, which is generating a ton of UFO sightings. Right.
Right. So we at the time we looked it up. Was that Starlink? So we looked
because we
up.
Wanted to know. Yeah,
right.
We are all about the paranormal, but we want to make sure we can verify it.
So I think it. You know, you pulled up a website that had kind of real time tracking of where the Starlink stuff was and when to see it. And in the cases, the two cases that we would have been able to see at that time at that night, in both cases they traversed the sky at like 69 degrees, which again, it would have been lower on, that would have been closer to like how the ISS traversed the sky. Mm-hmm. And it would not have disappeared at the zenith, which is again, 90 degrees from our position.
Also, tracking the time, it showed that it would have taken place during while we were doing our Estus session, so we wouldn't have been looking, and that it only takes less than
six minutes
for the entire train to cross the sky, and which means we would have seen this probably 10 minutes after it would have finished.
Yeah, so I think that the timing was that it was supposed to come through at 9:38.
Mm-hmm.
Takes 6 minutes to traverse the sky,
which puts, us at
9:44. At 9:45, you tap me on the leg to come out of our dual Estus session.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't actually look up at the night sky until probably 9:46 or 9:47.
Yeah, I would say 9:47.
So that was,
which is odd, since your dream that you shared last week said that you saw a UFO and looked at your watch and said that it was 9:47.
And also in my dream, it was a crescent moon out. Mm-hmm. And that's what was out the other night.
As well as Venus. Venus was in the sky as well and very, very big. But what's best about this, Josh, is that it didn't end after ISS. So there was a big break.
Right.
So thought it was done.
While we're doing the research to rule out, you know, what people are going to say it was, or to confirm if that's, you know, I don't want to say that we went into the research to try to prove that it wasn't that, but while we were doing that, we saw two other objects move in a completely different line.
Minutes apart.
ISS. Yeah. So, this is probably, I would say like 4 or 5, maybe even 6 minutes after we saw the ISS fly across,
which was after the 7 we saw.
Yeah.
So, one was similar to the path that the others were taking, though it was off by a hair, but the other one was going
So
a completely different direction.
Right. So the one that was kind of similar was still kind of going northwest to southeast, although a slightly different angle. And then the other one that was we saw was going like northwest to northeast. Like it was kind of cutting across the sky that way. And so, yeah, I mean, it was just really interesting. So I'm going to say, and in fact, I submitted a MUFON report for our sightings, mm-hmm. But I'm going to say that we saw 9 UFOs, and that based on the research that both of us have done and looking into the Starlink trains as well as the ISS, as well as I found a site that tracks all of the satellites that are currently orbiting the Earth, and I went back and looked, and none of the satellites were passing during the time that we were looking at that time of night, and that would have appeared at 90 degrees from our perspective. So again, I'm going to all of that into consideration. I'm going to say that we saw 9 UFOs.
Yeah. The other thing is that the other images and videos of Starlink 3, which is the one that had passed over that night, show them so much closer together, as if they're like a string of Christmas lights. These were spaced out so far apart.
Yeah. I would even say closer to the Christmas lights, almost like a string of pearls.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were that close to each other
with different sized lights and things like that.
And that's not what this was. Not at all.
Not at all. And the fact that it disappeared mid, you know, zenith, like the Starlink like that, I haven't seen any that disappear in the middle of the sky.
Well, and I haven't seen any Starlink that that travels at the 90-degree angle. It usually cuts kind of across the sky. So mm-hmm. it's you know, look up Starlink, satellite train, and what you'll find is a lot of sightings of it kind of, you know, going low in the high horizon, or maybe around 45 degrees or 60 degrees or even 70 degrees, but nothing flies at 90 degrees in the night sky. And then number two, like you said, there are 6 different Starlink trains that are up there right now. And some of them are spaced a little differently apart from each other than mm-hmm. that string of pearls one. But even with that being said, I researched into all 6 trains. We were only able to see 2 trains the night that we were out there. One of them occurred really early in the evening, like around 8 or 8:30. Mm-hmm. The other one that occurred close to where we were would have been the string of pearls one. And so there's no way that what we saw was a Starlink satellite train, unless they've put a 7th one out there and didn't tell anybody.
Right. Well, what's interesting is that we theorized that if this was extraterrestrial in nature, or government, whatever, UFO doesn't always imply aliens.
Right.
But if it is that, it's almost as if it was using Starlink to kind of hide its wake.
Yeah, it was a mimic, right?
Yeah.
It was like people are going to attribute this to Starlink, so we're going to fly like Starlink.
Right, and it almost felt like it was entering some sort of camouflaged ship.
Or yeah, just, you know.
Because even the two that came later still disappeared. And even that one that was sitting differently on the horizon, it was almost as if the ship had moved.
Yeah. So the other thing is back on, for anybody who's been listening for a little while, back on the episode that would have come out right around, let's say, January 21st, somewhere in there, I talked about, this is actually where I introduced the spooky news story of Starlink, because it related to a sighting that I had on January 14th of the exact same experience that we saw the other night. I then attributed it to Starlink. Having gone back now from our experience on Sunday, having gone back now and researched Starlink for that date and time, I now know that that also was not Starlink, and that experience was exactly the same. A spaced out series of lights that disappeared when they reached the zenith.
Yeah, and you know, we were very good by documenting our time and things like that on purpose. But the other thing interesting that happened is that I tried to videotape it. I could see all the other stars in the sky. I've got the new Samsung S20 Ultra 5G. It's incredibly accurate in terms of things, seeing things at night. I could see all the other stars in the sky. You can see it in my 17-second video where you just hear me frustrated, but you cannot see those.
Yep, can't see the lights moving in.
You can't see the lights.
And what's really,
and they were just as bright as the other stars, minus Venus.
Right. Well, and what's really interesting about that is that you know, a couple of weeks back, we talked about, or I think it might have been last week in our Creepy Ketchup, we talked about the Capella star moving around, mm-hmm. and you were able to get that on video. And that star was probably just a hair brighter than what we saw moving in the sky that night. So, yeah. So the fact that you were able to get that on video, but not these on video, and your phone is what, a couple weeks old?
Yeah.
So, you know, it gets back to what we've talked about before, and what Kiel talked about, is that the phenomenon only lets you record what it wants you to record. It only lets you capture what it wants you to capture. So,
yep. Very, very interesting, man. That was, I mean, I was up all night. I couldn't shake it. I couldn't shake it. Cause then not only that, we're going back and we're listening to the Estes method. And then I've randomly got two different voices going on.
Yeah, well, that whole thing around the Estes message, the dual one, was just really weird. It was like I was channeling two individuals who knew each other, and they were talking about like their kids or something. And then you were channeling two or three individuals who were having a discussion, and one of those was really, really odd in that it would just drop to like this really low register voice. And say, like, you would be talking in your normal annoying Stefan voice, and then all of a sudden you would hear no, like in this kind of.
It was weird, and it's like, and it's not like it was some other voice. It was definitely my voice, but yeah. I don't recall dropping my register. Nor, and truth be told, because of the UFO sightings, I didn't even remember the things that I had talked about, let alone dropping my register. You know. And I don't know if that was just the short-term memory loss, or I was like tapped into something, or I don't know. I mean, I definitely opened myself more than I ever have before, because we were in Waverly Park, near Waverly, and things like that, and so I was kind of allowing something, you know, to come in. But
So I mean, we'll be putting that audio up on YouTube in the coming weeks for anybody who wants to check that out. But yeah, it's definitely, we got a couple of names from that audio, and I think there'll be probably some more to come on that particular audio clip that we got.
Agreed.
It was around 20 minutes or so, and it's a little bit like going to a family event, in which nobody can go to right now because we're all stuck in our houses. But going to a family event and listening to all the different conversations that are happening, and then trying to parse out what is relative to each one of the conversations. And so when you listen to that, keep that in mind, is that I don't think, having gone back and listened to it, anything that I was saying was relevant to what you were saying. So that, yeah, that particular theory around the Estes method, dual Estes session, I think, at least for this particular situation, is a little debunked.
Yeah, but what is true is I don't know that it's necessarily answers to questions. And yeah. It almost feels like this is something I can do on my own and record to.
Yeah, and that's actually what I was thinking, is that I might actually do an Estes session and record me just whatever comes out of my mouth and see if it means anything to us. And in fact, I mean, I think I shared the other night, having gone back and listened to some of the ones that we've done that we did before, they didn't necessarily mean anything then, but they mean more now. So it's almost
time is relative,
right? out of time, if you will.
So. It's interesting though. I told Brad was asking me about the Estes sessions and stuff. And I was like, it's interesting. I never really thought about how much trust it takes for us, because, you know, you're blinding yourself and deafening yourself. And I have to completely trust that you're not going to mess with me, that you're not going to do anything, you know, to me. And then when we're out in nature, it's even more scary because we don't know who's going to come up. You know, that's what was
right
about doing the double Estes method, was that we couldn't see or hear anyone around us. I mean, anybody could have robbed us. And
right. Exactly.
You know,
So and that's true. Even the one we did that was outside of Waverly Hill Sanatorium, mm-hmm. that was even, I think, a little even worse. I don't know, worse is not the right, but a little more, I guess, scarier is
jarring.
That. Yeah. Because there was entities out, you know, we were so close to something that,
right.
It that was has almost- been,
it was almost scarier for the person not blindfolded.
Right. Because you're sitting in there basically by yourself interacting with things. So mm-hmm. yeah, it was.
Well, let's move on, unless you got any other creepy ketchup you wanted to share.
No.
I don't either. All right, because I really want to get, I know we're running long again, so I want to get into this getting spooky with Santiago Cirillo. So I'm really excited for you guys to check this out. So we're going to go ahead and move right into that interview.
That's the Hiya Nation, baby. That's the way we do it. We're just awesome, no?
Yeah.
We're great, no? We are just amazing, ladies and gentlemen. We're in there.
All right, so we have a very, very cool interview, getting spooky with actor Santiago Cirillo. Thank you so much for doing this for us, Santiago.
You're welcome. Hiya, everybody.
Perfect, man. That's you're jamming right with us. We're crazy as hell, man. But yeah, we're so thankful to have you on here. Not only are you an actor, but you love paranormal stuff. You're buddies with Keith Age and all the Gibson work on the guitars, man. I mean, you fit in the rock and roll ghost hunter like nobody else, man.
Oh, dude, I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt, but it led me to a great, great path, man. It got me into actually doing the gift I have and everything. So I'm very honored and blessed. Went through it all.
Yeah, absolutely. And so most of our actors know you from Walking Dead and Nashville. So those are two very, very cool shows, especially Walking Dead, since we love paranormal. And I'm a Walking Dead fan. And so it was really great to see a character that I loved. In fact, I signed the petition on change.org trying to get you to come back.
Oh, nice. You know, there's some good stuff about that coming soon. So hopefully it works out, man. And we'll see where it leads to. But
because, man, you were on your way to the bus, and I was like, he's going to make it.
It's kind of hard, you know. Latinos don't last that long in horror movies. That's just the damn truth. I go in there, you know. We're the guys that jump on grenades. No, run. I'll save yourselves and... Not me. If I was in a movie, if I was running, I'd be the first one out the door to look.
That's me too. That's me too, man. I'd be tripping people along the way. Be like, get them.
like that episode of Seinfeld where George smells smoke and runs and like pushes the old lady out of the way to get out the apartment first.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. That's it right there.
So Santiago, just a couple of, kind of like some introductory questions for people who may not know, you know, maybe not who you are. Maybe they've lived underneath a rock for the last couple of years. So I know that in looking at your bio, I think on IMDb, and I don't know how accurate it is, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it said you were in the Army. Is that correct?
Yes, I was in the infantry. I was at a station at Fort Campbell, 3rd of the 502nd.
So that's here in Kentucky.
The actual Fort Campbell is in the borderline of Kentucky and Tennessee.
Yeah, that oddly enough, that's where my grandfather in World War II was stationed. He was there because I used to live in Campbellsville. And as he got older, he kept thinking I meant Fort Campbell. And so he would always be like, you know, I was stationed at Fort Campbell.
That's what it was called back in the day.
Yeah, that's cool, man. What a coincidence, man. Kentucky, even, you know, that's where Robert Kirkman's from, is Lexington. So
yeah, I've been out there. I've been out there in Christiana?
Cynthiana.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Ooh,
yeah.
I'm so bad because they treated me under bed and breakfast and stuff.
Nice.
I came here for a movie premiere, a paranormal horror movie, actually.
Nice.
So we did the premiere at their theater downtown, and it was pretty cool.
So we had another guy on, I don't know, probably what, Stefan? It's been 6 or 7 months ago, Steve Stanek.
Oh, yeah, Steve Stanek, yeah.
And he was telling us, because I think he was a Marine, I think I want to say, and he was telling us all these crazy paranormal stories that he had when he was deployed. I don't know if you have any paranormal-type stories from when you were in the Army.
No, not really. I had like a lot of things when I was a kid and so forth and teenage kind of. But I didn't know what I had until I was invited to a lot of these actually haunted facilities and ghost hunters and some investigators, you know.
Yeah.
And me thinking, oh, this is full of shit. This is crap. Ah, this ain't real, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff that I felt when I was a kid came back to me, and stuff that it is it's like unreal in the human eyes.
Yeah.
Happened, you know, and made people that have been in the business for over 30 years flip out. You know, like, oh my God, what energy do you have? And, it all clicked, you know, it all clicked together. So then, Keith Age was one of the people who witnessed it. And this is like after I was like, man, let me try this again. It's like my third attempt. And it was in Kentucky, as a matter of fact. I met with Keith and he's like, man, what the heck? This stuff don't happen like that no more.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like constant places that I was invited to. And I was just testing myself. And it's the same story, you know, film, videos, recordings, you name it, man. And it was good because I wasn't carrying it, you know, I wasn't recording it or nothing. It was just people who were around me to show that I'm not a how do you say, a fraud or something.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I was literally a virgin into it. You know, I got my cherry popped by Keith Age.
As did we all. Am I right? No, I had a similar story for Steven as well. I mean, he had some things going on as a kid. He didn't understand it. And then he was in Iraq and he's pretty sure him and his buddy saw a djinn and some other things, but that opened the door. And even myself, I mean, it took till I was in college to kind of understand what was happening because of other people that came into my life. So that's pretty interesting, man. One of the cool things is I noticed that you were raised in Lorain, Ohio as well. Which is, I grew up in Toledo and Cleveland, so not too far from one another. Yeah, I grew up in, spent my summers in Olmsted Falls.
So. Oh, well, yeah, I know exactly where I am. Man, I've been all of them. I go to Dayton, that's where I film some movies sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. My mom lived in Olmsted Falls. My dad lived in Toledo. So we spent our summers in Cleveland and the other times in Toledo. So I'm born and raised Ohio, too.
Nice guy fan, hopefully.
Yes, yes.
I'm
a big Buckeye fan. That's me, man.
Absolutely.
And then Stefan, what's the minor league team up there you used to talk about all the time? The minor league baseball team.
The Mud Hens?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Toledo Mud Hens.
Oh, yeah, in Toledo.
Yeah, in Toledo, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the minor leagues. There's a lot of minor leagues in Ohio.
Lots of them, yeah. The Dayton.
Toledo was the border.
Washington.
Yeah.
Something about great about Ohio.
Don't they call it the Heartland, or is that something else?
No, I mean it's the Heartland. Heartbeat. Yeah, the heart of Ohio. Because it's a big heart.
Heartbeat of America.
Yeah.
So you kind of hinted at it, and so it's piqued my interest now, and I really got to know. What were your experiences as a kid that kind of resurfaced later on?
Voices, movements, stuff, shadows, the cold freezing spell, like somebody went over your grave, but you know someone's around. The feeling of someone breathing on you, touching. There was a point where I used to walk at graveyards to get the peace. And a lot of people, there's graveyards. You know, older graveyards, war history stuff I can see. But the newest, fresh graveyards to me is just, you know, really not at all there. It's more peaceful. Because I've walked into graveyards that are ancient in history where it feels so different. And just someone's plot, you know, so I used to freshly graveyard, fresh new ones. Upgrade back in the days, where I just know it used to be farmland, nothing else, you know.
Huh, and
walk in and just get some comfort, peace, man. So I never tell nobody because, you know, those are the days where everybody would put on pills in the 80s or go on employment welfare to get your kid looked at, you know.
Yeah.
And they want to be crazy, you know.
Yeah, it's something a couple weeks back we had Todd Bonner on from Detroit Paranormal Expedition, and that was something that we talked about is when he first got started into things, it was really taboo and almost severely frowned upon to be interested in anything paranormal. And then over the last probably 15 years or so.
Yeah.
It's really started to ramp back up in that it's really a strong part of our culture.
Well, and some of it was the satanic panic of the late 70s and 80s is that everything kind of occult and paranormal and supernatural tended to get lumped into that. And so that made the evangelicals and the Catholics just go, hey,
God's those are the days that they spin the records backwards and all of a sudden, oh, there's a hidden message. It's freaking Metallica. Shit.
Yeah. And of course, you know, the metal bands, I mean, they were feeding off that. They were making money. So, I mean, it's all just whatever. But yeah, back then it was very taboo. You know, even my household was kind of a mixed household. You know, in some ways it was cool because my grandmother was into this stuff, but my dad was kind of like, I'm not 100%. He had some bad experiences when he was a kid. But I had other friends because we were all into it. I mean, you couldn't even mention anything like that or they would get in trouble, you know? So.
Yeah, of course. That's, you know, I was raised the same way. You know, I didn't see a Disney movie until I was 18. I pretty much, and fed the Bible since I was a kid and on. But one of the things is that when I went to these places and so forth and things started happening, it wasn't really about religion or anything. I think the reason what it was is that not only with the experience, the so far blessings I had when I was a kid, added to that, I got to experience a little bit of the death side. I was bullied as a kid. I tried to commit suicide 5 times. Mm-hmm. You know, I went through the times where I just felt, you know, God had my life on pause. Everybody was just constantly bullying me for everything possible, man. I mean, I was in days. I was thrown in lockers and spit at through the lockers and left there after gym class. I mean, I could go on and on.
Yeah.
And other than that, you know, I found myself. I controlled my soul, my life. You know, whether it was with faith or whether it was just a call of the wild, you can say.
Yeah.
That's where the Hayan Nation came. You know, I took over my life and prayed out in the field and just said, you know, God, take this pain away or I'm going to take it away. Mm-hmm. Instead of amen, hallelujah, and praise the Lord, I was yelled, Hayah. You know, powerful, universal slang for power, for energy, man. And at that time, I ran the world, man. It felt like infinity, but it was like 3 seconds. I could have called the bird down and bow down. I mean, I literally controlled, knowing the power that I have. So yeah. I use that. I use that to a lot of these facilities, man, and it brings so much positive energy to these facilities that it actually, when we go on these hunting trips and all that, it's a lot of negativity. People they feed off fear.
Yeah, have for
so
sure.
Fear and have so much, of negativity about, oh, this is bullshit, this ain't real, and tease. And you don't know, if you don't, it's just like science, man. If you don't study and know the paranormal and the after effect of life, you're not going to understand the things that you're about to witness.
Yep.
You're just going to go in theory. Oh, it's the devil. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. I mean, you got to know. Everything is a mystery. But with us being professionals, we can fill in that patch, that empty space to show you, man, it ain't, 10 demons attacking you. It can literally be you, your mom giving you a sign like, hey, play the lottery.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, it really... I think that's probably true for a lot of things, but 100% true for paranormal is if you have those preconceptions of what you think it is, then that's what you're going to get out of it. But if you're open to what it could be, then you're more likely to have a more positive experience, I think.
Agreed.
Right.
Agreed.
Right. I carry it all with, man, look, when I go to these places, I carry it all with respect. Make sure I say a quick prayer, say, tell the souls, the spirits, the afterlife, say, I'm here to respect you. I'm here to take advantage of you. I'm not here to try to disrespect you. I'm here out of respect. I'm here to follow your rules, And I yell, hi-ya. It's like I release the positive energy.
I love
and
it, man.
Just triggers something. It triggers it, man. People flip out because the people that were with me always have their own video, their own voice recordings. I mean, I could go on with stuff they had and just they ran out of the place like, oh my God, never, we're getting too close. It's like we're getting too far into it.
So is there a certain experience that you've had recently that that you might want to expand on or talk about?
Oh man, that's like the first time I ever went and got invited was in Kentucky, in Lexington, Kentucky. There was a house that was over 100 some years ago, where at the bottom of it had slave tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some investigators in there, like three different groups. We were at a Comic-Con, a horror Comic-Con, and they were like, hey, come on, let's go and investigate this house,
Yeah.
And the owner of it left it in the 80s. I mean, he literally left it just like it was in the 80s. He said, the kid, he was haunted. His family gave it to him when he was a teenager. So he said things started getting thrown places. He just couldn't live in it at all.
Wow.
So he just had a caretaker and he left it. He's like, don't take nothing out. He believed stuff was attached to it. And so he left it. And then he, out of drinking discussions with his friends, and he gave him the keys. He goes, have fun. Man, I walked in there. It was literally a frozen time capsule.
Oh, I'm going to have to check that out.
It was unbelievable, man. It was 80s everything. But the house had it was three floors, the basement, the middle floor and the top floor. And they haven't even plugged their stuff in yet. And everything started turning on, flickering.
Wow.
Jeez.
And I was yelling, hi-ya, at 2 o'clock in the morning, like ready, like felt the energy where, you go down a roller coaster and you just got no choice but to scream because you felt that big anxiety, that big, free fall effect. And that's what it was. And I yelled, hi-ya. And then they were like, man, it's 2 a.m. You can't be doing that. It's like, I'm telling you, I'm feeling something.
Well, I'll share this with you, Santiago. So I'm pagan now. But one of the things that we do in our rituals is that we raise the cone of power. And your hi-ya sounds exactly like what we do. We raise this energy and then with us, we'll chant or we'll do different things. And then it's this kind of this punch at the very end where everyone screams and it just releases this energy as a way for us
right.
to connect to the gods or connect to the spirits that are in the circle with us. So I, as soon as you said hi-ya, I said, I already know what you're doing.
It literally, any negativity that you can think of would disappear.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's certain places in these rooms where people think that, oh, this is where the medicine man always attacks women and beats up people and scratches people. Man, it totally flipped it around. It's like a celebration.
Well, I remember in my youth, probably maybe a year, my parents enrolled my brother and I in a karate class. And I don't know why. I guess they thought it would be beneficial for us. All it did is spend a lot of money. Yeah. But anyways, I remember one of the things that the instructor said in the karate class was that when you punch or when you whatever, you say something like it, hi-ya or ya or hi or whatever. And it's those verbal statements are really just a representation of the power that is behind whatever you're doing. And so that's really, I do the same thing. I don't verbally say anything, but as soon as when I go into a place or when I engage in something, I kind of focus internally and imagine like a ball of white light that expands, beyond me. So I'm doing even the same thing. I'm not verbalizing it like you and Stefan are doing, but we're all kind of, I think the intention is to kind of wash away, if you will, or put so much positive energy into a space that there's no place for that negative energy to be.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yep. It's like scaring fish, when guy's fishing, he's like, shut the hell up. I'm trying to fish, Cause you
That's
do.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So, you make a big noise. They're gone.
Right.
Dude, I went in his house after yelling that, and they had the cameras and a whole bunch of stuff. There was a basement that literally dropped where my breath, you could see smoke out of my breath. And it was 80, 90 degrees weather. Mm. And it just smoke coming out.
Mm. Wow.
There was a hole in the wall where they had the tunnels. And when they were there, the walls were black first. And all of a sudden, they got maroon red to the point where it just, you saw blood stains everywhere.
Wow.
Just everywhere. And then went up, they had the voice box, and it was asking for me to go upstairs. Went up to one of the room openings and I almost fainted because it's like I released something that was trapped there and needed good energy to get out. Mm. They had a video of a young girl. This was like Little House on the Prairie, 1918 something, hundreds kind of deal, where they had a little girl following me trying to hold my hand through the whole. They had this all on video.
Wow.
So that was like one of my first experiences. And then I've been everywhere from Tombstone to New York, asylums everywhere. I haven't been too many in Kentucky and so forth, but everything's the same.
Yeah,
I had a voice box in a hospital that you could hear the whole ER, the nurses being paged, doctors being paged, ambulance doors opening, people trying to get registered in for like 15 seconds, and then I had shadows that just followed me everywhere. I had orbs that went through me like I was a huge star, where I had grid boxes that got filled that you couldn't even see the grids no more inside of the room.
It's interesting. You have a very similar to myself and my sister. My sister and I, even though we're a year and a half apart, we call ourselves twins. And she's always been able to speak to spirits, and I can feel things and do different things. And a psychic once told us that everywhere we go, he just sees spirits around us. He said people like us are like a stage for them to play on, and that's what your story just reminded me of. It's like you're a stage and they're looking for that stage, and not everybody has that.
So if you are the twins, does that make you the Wonder Twins?
Yeah.
Activate.
I'm form of water.
You have to carry me in a bucket. Grab the bucket.
That's the only reason they had the monkey Gleek with them, was so that he could carry the bucket.
Yeah.
That's so funny. That's fucking hilarious. Yeah, but Yeah, dude. I mean, I'm in that era, man, where it's just very intrigued, and you know, being like a ghost magnet, it attracts so many people that are in this industry.
Yeah.
You know, I go to these paranormal cons, and I'm getting mediums and palm readers and gypsies. Everybody's like,
hear
voices, or you know, I feel like I'm on Tinder. I'm like, oh my God, please.
Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about, man.
So it sounds like that somebody needs to invent the paranormal Tinder app, is what I'm hearing.
There you go.
Call it ghosted, man, because that way if you swipe left, you're ghosting somebody.
Yeah. Hey, if you could be a professional hugger, I mean, you could do that.
Yes.
So it sounds like, Santiago, that you're on, like, so Stefan and I are very much on, like, a journey, an exploratory and a growing journey in what we understand and how we comprehend the paranormal.
And it sounds like becoming spiritual for us, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so it sounds like that you're either on or you're deep within in a similar type journey.
Oh, yeah. Dude, it is. If the stories that I actually physically, you know, went through when I got introduced to this are unreal, you know, passing out in a hallway, waking up in another room, people are flipping out because the room is filled. They're like, you were not there. We were just sitting on that couch and I show up laying down. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable, you know, and you can't explain it to people unless they're part of your peers, you know, right. Unless they're like part of the paranormal world where, you know, they're like, yeah, I can see what's going on. You know, and they not just help me build in this journey, but understand it more.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, it's something we've talked about a lot, is that there seems to be an overwhelming need for most people to assume that you're making it up.
Yeah. Right. Right. That's one reason.
It's anything else in the world, you wouldn't have to go to the lengths that you have to go to prove to someone that this really happened.
Yep, that's exactly right. I don't have to do nothing, and most of the people that get involved with me, they get all the rights to everything. Whatever you film, whatever you record, it's your rights. You guys put it out there.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that way, it's not attached to me. I don't get no money off of it or nothing.
Yep.
Let them show what I have to prove that I'm not a fraud or any kind of, you know, it's just I'm walking in this room and boom, it just hits.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, that harps, that kind of gets on another thing we've talked about recently, which is it seems like if you make any kind of money off of anything that you do in the paranormal realm, that automatically brings into question your honesty or your credibility in the story. And so it's awesome that, you know, you're just basically saying here's the evidence. I'm not making anything off of the evidence. So you guys, you know, there's no reason to question my credibility or my authenticity.
So take right. that. Hi-yah.
Hi-yah. It's addictive. You're going to be addicted to it.
I'm already a karate kid, man. Let's do this. But yeah, no, we were talking about that, how, you know, you look at some of these paranormal cases. We had Andrea Perrin on a couple weeks ago, and we ran across a episode of another podcast completely thinking that her and her whole family made up the whole thing because they sold the rights to the Conjuring movie and things like that. Here it is 40 years later, whatever. And yet, you know, a detective can write a story about his entire time as being a detective and no one questions him for making money.
Right.
You know, but she wants to tell her story to let people know how they handled it, because she wrote 3 books as well, and how they handled it and how to overcome it. And yet, therefore, she's a money hungry bitch.
That's the media for you, man.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, I'm telling you what, I mean, if I've had a lot of stuff happen to me, and if anybody came up to me and said, man, your story is just insane, can we write a book about this? Can we do a movie? We'll pay you $1 million. I'm going to say, yes, sir.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's like, I was like, well, hell, I was like, it'll save me money from doing scratch-offs. I'm good.
I mean, who would turn that down? Who would say, no, that's okay. That's okay.
I look at things, you know, like the Amityville haunting, and maybe that guy was messed up, Maybe not, but it's like, man, those families went through so, why would you put your family through all of that on the hope to come, right? Like, God, it just drives me nuts. It just drives me nuts.
Yeah, man. And you gotta be, that's why people have to be more educated.
Yes, yes. And that's what we try to do on here is we do a segment every show called Creepy Catch-Up to share with people the things that have happened to us, because these things have happened to me. And you can be a skeptic or not, but I know my story. I know the things that have happened to me. I know the things that Josh and I have seen together, the things that my sister and I have seen together and felt together and with bigger groups and stuff like that. And be a skeptic, I don't care, but I know my story.
Right, exactly.
And it just so happens to coincide with hundreds of thousands of other people in the world. So.
Right, exactly. That's the thing, is that when as a skeptic, when you take a look at something and you say, I don't believe that happened. Well, that's your right. You know, you have the right to say that you don't believe, but don't discount the experience or the shared experience from so many others, right? It's your right to have an opinion. It's not your right to force your opinion on somebody else.
Correct.
Oh, of course. I mean, I get into it a lot with people. They're like, well, you grew up, raised up Christian. I was like, let me ask you. If you don't believe in ghosts, then why do you believe an angel would help somebody in a car wreck?
Yep. We do a YouTube show called Fearscape Unhinged, and our next episode is actually about that.
I mean, that's just simple stuff. You know, I had a preacher talk to me, I was like, then why do you have a painting of this guy with a beard and blue eyes on your wall?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? I was like, there's no description of Jesus Christ in the Bible except for the second coming, which is just about his hair and his skin. And he's like, well, I was like, no, you're blasphemy. You blasphemy. You know, and he got in an argument about it. But like I said, you know, you have to know the facts. You have to know the investigation. You have to know the material that's out there besides people trying to market you the material.
Right.
Yep.
When it comes to market, it's about money and popularity. It doesn't come about facts.
Right. You know, something that I think I've said this quite a bit over the last couple of episodes, and it's a paraphrase from something that I read in a John Keel book. But it basically is the death of objectivity is belief. And so the moment that you say, I'm going to accept one possible solution or one possible truth as the only truth, you're going to believe in that as the only truth, then you've just lost all of your objectivity.
Right. Yeah, because you don't concentrate on the full facts. You can't just get one piece of the pie. You got to know the whole pie.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. You got to know where the pie was made.
Who doesn't want a whole pie? I mean,
Yeah, right now I could really go for some caramel pie from Old Charlie's.
Oh my God, be quarantined!
Yeah,
low the nutrition down, buddy. There's only certain rolls of toilet papers allowed in our house.
Nothing but fiber in our diet.
No fiber, protein for a while. Drink this milk, water. This flavored water.
Yep. Well, let me ask you, we'll backtrack a little bit here and talk a little bit more about you. And I was curious as to, after you got out of the Army and stuff like that, how did you get into acting? I mean, what was the lead into that?
Man, it was just, I'm a people person, you know. After going through some depression and life being bullied, I love people, man. I don't care where you're from, what you're about, you know, you could have three legs, four nipples, I don't give a shit. I'm gonna love you. You know, so that's how I was. And I always gave more hugs than shaking hands. You know, mm-hmm. I had women take my hand and I tell them, you squeeze it like you're powerful instead of these flimsy handshakes, you know, trying to motivate people.
Yeah.
And give them a little about my story and people get attracted to it. And at the same time, I had friends all the time saying, dude, you need to be on TV. And I'm like, all right, I'll try it. So I did like auditions for some top agencies, got signed up on the spot, man. So that's I ended up going through classes and getting tutoring and try to get involved in not just the acting, but the business side.
Yeah.
I was making freaking almost $70,000 plus by myself as a paralegal in Nashville, and I gave it all up to the acting, and, you know, different choices and different routes it took me. And I just think it's the right thing.
Yeah.
So within a year, I was on TV, and then it kept on.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I'm an actor myself. I do, but I mostly do improv. I teach. I run an improv school and do improv comedy. But yeah, I've been acting and teaching and doing improv for 20 years, man. It's an art form.
Dude, like, improv is so great.
Yeah,
I always say the best actors are stage actors. If you can improv and work on stage, man, you're fantastic.
Dude, I tell you what, I can tell right away in my intro class who has acting experience and who doesn't. I can make you an improviser either way. But boy, I can work with you like nobody's business if you've got some acting training. So
there you go. That's how you do it, man. It brings people's inner self out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable talent out there.
Yeah. Now, see, me on the other hand, I've been told, Stefan has told me numerous times that I have a face for print. So,
well, I can do put printing on stuff people wipe themselves with, you know. You'll be all
right. Got a face for radio, too.
Wow, that love is right there, buddy.
Oh, yep. Man, yeah. We've known each other for, God, 22 years.
20 something years, yeah. Yeah.
Good times.
Right. 95, I think.
But yeah, so we noticed that you have been doing some paranormal related movies as well that look pretty cool, man. And so do you ever just seek those out because you like that stuff, or do they just come at you?
You know, it's just a network. It's a network. It's, mm-hmm. You know, media, Comic Cons, you know, it's always a business for me. I'm always in the interview wherever I go.
Yeah, the hustle, man. I know the hustle.
Keith Age and a whole bunch of the paranormal guys were talking about, and ladies, there are paranormal women out there, groups that were mentioning my name a lot. And they got into a guy named Christopher Maggard, who did paranormal stuff and was doing a movie called Rosalie based on true events, filming it at Post Town Elementary School, actual haunting place in Dayton, Ohio, near Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
And, they were like, you want to film it for like a month? We'll pay you. You know, we negotiated here and there for it. And then I was just a guest star on it. Like the guest, you know, one, like some character that was going to be killed off within the first 30 seconds of the movie.
Oh, wow.
And his lead actor bailed out on him for something. And he came and goes, man, I offer you this and that. And I was like, dude, I'll take the lead role. And then we worked it out where we get to promote the haunted facility a lot. A lot of these haunted facilities don't get promoted. They're like museums, man. You got to keep them alive, and a lot of people need this money. So we made sure we made Post Town Elementary well known so people could come out there and create a bigger tourist attraction. So, I did the movie, and they kept telling me all these stories and everything, and I admittedly felt a vibe.
Yeah.
So they made a suite out of two classrooms. I slept in that place for a month. Some of the production crew was on the sleeping in there, and they got attacked. The special effects crew ended up getting a hotel about a mile away from being attacked.
Oh, wow.
They got rented a trailer, brought a trailer in so they could sleep out in the
outside.
I'm sleeping like a king. Inside the school. They're like, what's wrong with you? I said, it's like me and Jesus the cool, man. But during that time, the owner got attacked. The guy that owned the place got attacked in there. And then they had a whole recording of a school session above me going on like at 2 in the morning.
Wow.
Stuff recorded and everything. But I had great experience. You know, nothing bothered me. I respect it. I didn't mess around with it, you know, and got to film the movie, and it ended up winning Best Horror Paranormal Movie and some film festivals and Best Special Effects.
Very cool, man.
Great on Amazon, and it's on Tubi.
Yeah, I got
a lot of other places, so
got my list set up for you.
Watch it, man. It's a great show.
I love scary movies, so.
You'll love it. It's pretty creepy, man. And then, you know, I that's what I do. I do a lot of horror movies and write
horror.
I do books. Oh my God. I mean, I'm involved in it a lot. You know, I have Beast of the Water. Got a movie, Beast of the Water, on Hulu. And it's also on Tubi, also. But it's like that scary and horror movie.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. And Josh, we need to hit up that that school. We're not
far. Well, I was gonna say, yeah. Well, I think Keith is doing something up there with like a it's like a fest.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, too. Keith does something up there, and I told him, I said, try to get Rosalie to play in the gym.
Yeah,
and we can try to do a meet and greet and everything, just play it in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And raise some money for the place and stuff.
Heck yeah. And we should, that's what I was saying. We should talk to the guy too, see if we can get him on here so we can raise some awareness for it too.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be cool.
That'd be good. Yep.
I love supporting my Ohio people.
There you go, buddy.
Love supporting paranormal people. So
Ohio.
Dad, you see, you're the man, dude. You got it going on. You should walk around in red carpet everywhere you go. That includes Walmart.
That's what I tell my wife, and she doesn't agree. So. So something we wanted to talk to you about is, so we do more than ghost related stuff. We talk about cryptids and Bigfoot and aliens and things like that. And so the first question is how do you feel about that stuff? And then have you had any run-ins with Bigfoot or aliens or any UFOs or anything like that?
No, I haven't. I mean, I look up at the sky all the time and tell my wife, I was like, hey, that's watching us. There's some hovering, you know, or, you know, I live in a big farmland, and I always joke around. It's like, I think Bigfoot's somewhere out here.
Yeah. But
I have studied it. I have studied it from not just watching YouTube shows, but I've studied and read a lot to the point where I have this book I wrote about an apocalypse, but it deals with, of course, zombies. But I introduced the world with different creatures that, you know, science, vampires, Frankenstein. Yeah. It's a whole different concept. And one of the things I was studying that, to add to the second book that I'm working on is the Sasquatch, the Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. And the stories, you know, there's legends, there's certain myths, there's certain truth to it. But, you know, I always say, I was like, man, we need to quit getting blurry pictures. Somebody needs to come home, you know, and put a collar on them or something.
But, well, you know what?
I don't deny it, because look at the market that's involved in it, and the unexplained stories, true stories.
Yeah.
Why would people lie about it?
Well, and going back centuries.
Yeah. Well, and what's really interesting, I think, is that, and there's a theory, again, I'm kind of hung up on Keel a little bit, but there's a theory by John Keel that he writes about in the Mothman Prophecies, is that that all of those things, all of those phenomenon are really linked to kind of one big phenomenon, and that one big phenomenon causes those problems to be with, you know, your recording equipment. I mean, Stefan, you know this from just the other night. You were trying to record something, your phone's like only weeks old and it wasn't working right. So
yeah, we talked about it on this episode, is we saw 9 unidentified flying objects in a row, as well as watching the International Space Station fly over, which kind of gave us a point of reference. And yeah, I tried recording that, couldn't get anything. It was just pitch black. But yet I could see all the other stars. Even in the video, you can see the other stars that are there that are just as bright, but you couldn't see what we were seeing.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell, man?
That's Area 51 for you. Area 51.
Exactly.
So yeah, you know, that's the whole theory, though, that your equipment only works when the phenomenon wants to let it work. So
right. And you never know, man. You know, there's a lot of unexplained things that, like Area 51 and so forth. So you can't really mess with it. It goes back to like control. So you can't really mess with what's out there that makes money. And one of the biggest things that makes money for this world is religion.
Yep.
And if you explain and prove there's another galaxy and Captain Kirk is a real person, you know, and then, you know, and you see these aliens and all this stuff, the whole economy and everything, that from the constitutions to different nations, everything would crumble and have to be rebuilt, because they were like, oh, it's a lie. The whole thing was a lie.
Yeah.
You know, and it'll totally, you know, and you can't, you know, you can't, look at the corona thing now. You can't even control somebody, stay in their damn house, you know.
No.
So imagine the theories and everything if it was proven.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Stephanie and I were talking just a couple of days ago about how much how much money the church, you know, the church brings in, you know, for the church and the church related activities. And you're right. I mean, if you were to somehow, you know, show irrefutable proof of extraterrestrials or whatever, then that would shatter a lot of those preconceived notions.
Yeah. And that would be we covered an episode on the vaults of the Vatican. It's like, you know, there are many people there that believe that they do have proof of all of those things, but hide that for that purpose, because I mean, they're thousands of years into a big business at this point, and they have their own, country. Vatican City is its own principality.
Yep. Right.
You know what I mean? And that's just the Catholics. You know what I mean? It's like, we're not even talking about the Islam or Hindu or other things, though. Some of them, like Hinduism, some of their myths kind of lend itself.
Yeah. I feel like they would just roll with the punches.
Yeah,
on that
I think
one.
They'd like, be like, "Yeah, that's
yeah, Vishnu. That works."
Yeah, absolutely, Vishnu. Yeah, yeah.
Everybody asks you, "What do you study?" I'm studying Jedi now, so I'm just gonna go with it.
Yep, that's me too. Me too.
Well, that's, you know,
just
the whole,
keeping myself open.
The whole idea of around, you know, we've talked about it before. Around, you can be spiritual without being religious.
Correct.
So. Right. Right.
Yep, I'd rather be spiritual anyways. I love my, you know, I say pagan more than I say Wiccan, because I'm also Buddhist and some other things. And I like to kind of take the things that I want that work for me. I'm ever growing, ever constant. There's a lot of things from Christianity that are still a part of my life.
Your hodgepodge.
Right.
Yeah, it's my hodgepodge. It's ever evolving.
Don't jump around like holidays, though. Don't be Irish on St. Patrick's Day and Mexico on Cinco de Mayo.
I get them all.
Cancun, baby, Cancun.
I get them all. Well, it's funny. I told Keith the other day that if you want to scare me from my neighborhood, don't burn a cross in my front yard. Burn a question mark.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's because, man, there's just I have too many questions, man, and not enough answers yet. And I'm constantly
I think that's all a personal spirit relationship, a personal travel, you know, because you most of the time you try to look for answers. It's right there in front of your face. If you just, you know, but a lot of people listen to people with their own theories, you know.
Yes. And you gotta open yourself.
Yeah. I mean, you can't. You got to test the waters, but try to test it without being freaking fully committed to it. Because it'll get you mindset confused, and you're like, well, what is the truth? Then you're the whole deal, what if, what happens, what this.
Right.
You know, and it just destroys your mind, man. You know, experience it. Travel yourself. Get to know it. Do the marketing thing. Do the research, and get to know for yourself.
Well, and even then, I mean, it's like, I'm like, come on, Christians, your Bible is full of the neatest, coolest, weirdest stuff ever. Like, I mean, you guys, like, there's, you know, for example, you got the Nephilim, and I bring that up because I saw you were in the Nephilim Chronicles there.
Yay! I know the Nephilim.
But like, Nephilim are so, what a crazy cool thing to have in your religious history. You know, and we did a whole episode on biblical creatures and stuff like that. And it's like, if anyone should be believing in the paranormal, it's Christians, you know.
Right. The Nephilim, the giants.
Yeah, the behemoths and just everything, man. And they have a thing, the lady in there called the Witch of Endor. I mean, like, come on, there's some cool stuff.
Yeah,
there's some
cool
It's some cool stuff in there, man. I mean, you got the Jewish people who blew on a horn and knocked the city down, you know, because a voice came out of a golden box. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's cool, so you could think my stuff's cool too.
So. That's funny.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. Well, hey, let me say that this has been a great, I have thoroughly enjoyed having you on. I hope we can do it again, make like a part two, if you will.
Yeah, do it. I'll come in with my radio voice. We are live here, ladies and gentlemen, talking about the scary, the buoy, the brrr.
Yeah, we've got Santiago Cirillo here.
But yeah, I think we need to start kind of wrapping things up. I'm sure we could keep going forever and ever, but I know we all got things that we've got to get done. Real quick, if you could just take a couple minutes and say, you know, where can people find you? What have you got going on that you want to let our listeners know about?
Well, right now, once this thing opens up, this Corona thing opens up, I'll be back filming. I got a movie called Slaughtery that's finished that we did in Jonesboro, Arkansas, which much love to people in Jonesboro going through a tornado and stuff. And I am working on a deal with a vampire-themed TV show that I'm filming in Clarksville, Tennessee, with some sci-fi channel friends of mine, Rick Prince. I'm working on book two of the zombie, Zombified, the Headhunter.
Mm-hmm. Which, got that right there. We'll be sharing that on our website as well. People can get a link straight to the first book, and all of that. We have that on our guest page. I'm interested in this Body Jackers, man. That looks cool.
Oh yeah. That's actually a TV show that's up on the desk of HBO, man. And hopefully it works good. Elizabeth White, the director.
Yeah, it looks cool,
and,
man.
She does stuff for HBO and Showtime. Yeah, I got a lot. Man, it's a serious way, you know. So we'll see.
Yeah, man, anytime you got stuff going on, let us know, and we'll share it out to our fans and all that stuff, man. We love our guests like we love our family, man.
Yep. And Santi,
I appreciate it, man.
If people wanted to follow you on social media or anything, where can they find you?
Man, I'm on everything. Google my name, Santiago Cirillo. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I'm personal with everybody, so I give you the response. It won't be a robot. It'll be me.
That's awesome, man. Well, I absolutely agree with that, man. You're so personable, man, and I feel like we made some good friends today, man.
Man, I thank you guys for the opportunity, man, and just a quick thing out there. You guys know I'm an infantry veteran. Mm-hmm. My family's been in it since World War II, and I just want you guys to – I do a thing called the Haya Nation Movement. It's against bullying, against suicide, telling people from young adults to – I mean from kids to adults to live life, follow their dreams, and always be you. So I hope you guys support that out there.
Absolutely. Oh, definitely. Man. Absolutely. Definitely. You get your way to Louisville anytime soon, let us know. We'll buy you dinner. If later this year, I'll be living in Phoenix. So if you're out that way, let me know.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Showtime.
Yep. But cool, man. We appreciate you. And like we said, again, we'd love to have you on at any time, man. So if you got some cool stuff later on down the road, we can do another Getting Spooky Part 2 with you. We would absolutely appreciate it, man. And we thank you.
Hey, I'm in there, Prego. I'm in there like Prego.
Well, cool. Let me dip my pasta in it, man.
Yeah! Shit, we're going to have to call Pornhub and see if we can get a deal with them.
Yeah, I'm sure Keith knows a guy. All right, man. All right. Well, thanks again, man, and we will catch you on the flip side, man.
All right, man. Take care. Live life, y'all.
All right. Thanks.
Whew, man, how great was Santiago, man?
Yeah, that was a great interview, and he is just a bundle of positive energy.
That's my kind of dude, man.
Yeah,
I like that.
We all need some more positive energy. I think even nowadays, everybody's just kind of getting drawn down in all the negative stuff. So
for sure. But yeah, make sure to check out his Facebook and all that stuff, and Instagram and all that jazz. You know, we'll be tagging him there, and just search Google. You'll be able to find his IMDb page and all that stuff. Yeah. And check out the Haya man. I'm just all about it. His organization as well as all that. And we'll be posting his book on our guest page as well. So you'll be checking that out, but yeah, thanks again, Santiago. If you're listening, man, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
It was a great show.
Lots of stuff. Thanks to Keith, man, for hooking us up. But yeah, I guess we need to move into our listener store before we get out of here.
Yep.
We gotta get crack-a-lackin', man. I'm just still high off of Santiago, man. So I know I'm going to go back and watch those Walking Dead episodes again with him in it, just so I can be like, I know you, man.
I know that guy.
but I do remember his character. Like I said, I did sign up that that change.org
petition,
man, because he was cool. I was hoping to see more from him. But anyways, the listener story that we're going to get into is, it's a pretty good one, from the same person. I believe we had them last week, Gene Moorfield. This is their second story. If it wasn't last week, it was the week before. But this is another one that comes from Haunted History of Kentucky. There's a lot of scary in Kentucky, and this works perfect because it makes me wonder if this is the house that Santiago was talking about. I'm just putting that out there. But yeah, this is that listener story.
Another true story about the house I grew up in. As I said before, the house was built around 1900 in Lexington, Kentucky, and is haunted by an unknown woman ghost. In some of my previous stories, I told of the premonition of the untimely death of my brother. In another, I talked about the ghost lady that appeared to me, then to the new homeowner's young child years later. This story that I'm going to tell you started as a simple matter of my wife helping my mother remodel one of the bedrooms in this old house back in the 1980s. They decided to put new wallpaper up, and my wife was tasked with the job of picking the wallpaper. She looked at a lot of wallpaper in several different stores, and finally picked one she liked in a store in Louisville. So my mom and my wife started removing the many layers of wallpaper. When they got down to the original layer, yep, it was an exact match to the wallpaper my wife had purchased. We were all in disbelief. How could this be possible? What are the odds? I now believe that the ghost lady that haunts this house is the original owner, and somehow she influenced my wife in her choice as to what wallpaper to buy. I believe she somehow warned me of my brother's death, and she revealed herself to me and to the new homeowner's young child, a child that I have never met. I still drive by my old childhood home, but I don't stop anymore. Sometimes I see the nice lady outside working in the yard. She told me she loves the house and would never leave. You know, my mama said the exact same thing. This house gets a hold on you that will never let go. And it keeps drawing me back from time to time.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, just the two stories from Gene are just incredible. And there's something about that house. And yeah. You know, I was like, here's a 120-year-old house. You know, I'm like, oh, is this the same house?
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't hear anything about no Underground Railroad and stuff, but still very cool.
Makes me wonder, you know, when we did the episode about Culbertson Mansion, you know, I wonder if the mistress of that house, you know, influences restoration designs.
Yeah,
because it was her house, right?
Maybe. So, that was a big thing, was that she was the decorator.
Right. So, it's again, talking about the word from the encyclopedia, even, you know, that it was a contact, not with the smell, but with the sight of the old wallpaper.
Right, right. Very, very interesting. And who knows how many layers of wallpaper they went through, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How funny, man. Very, very interesting. But yeah, make sure you guys, if you want to see your listener story or hear your listener story, excuse me, send those to fearscapepodcast@gmail.com. We love those. We want those. Find us on any of those Facebook groups that we're on. Shoot us a message there. Or hit us up on our social media. You can find us at Fearscape. At Fearscape Pod. That's on Instagram, Twitter, as well as Facebook. You can also get our YouTube page. That's youtube.com/fearscapemedia. All of this can be found on our website, fearscapepodcast.com.
Yep. And again, just if you're a fan of the show, if you're a fan of what we're doing on YouTube, or you just want to help us out, you know, we have Patreon. We have a store that you can get some awesome t-shirts from. We're still working on. We want to make sure that we can get you all some really awesome blankets for our blanket hugger community. So we're still working on the items for that. But in the meantime, you can go out there and get your shirt, a hat, a tote bag, a pillow, all kinds of stuff with some really awesome designs from Fearscape.
Yeah, so you can find all of that on our website, fearscapepodcast.com. You can find the link to our Patreon, to our online store, and to all of our social media, as well as links to all of our episodes, past and present. So you make sure, check that stuff out, and it'll hold you over until next week.
Yeah, definitely.
We have a really, really cool episode next week that we're excited to share with you. Another Getting Spooky episode. So be on the lookout for that. But once again, I want to thank Santiago so much. Thank you. Thank you for coming on to our show. You are an absolute blast. And to that, I say hi-ya!
Hi-ya!
That's right. And but we're going to get out of here. Josh, thanks for sticking by me, man.
Well, thanks for complimenting my nostrils.
Just the thumb one.
Yeah, just a thumb nostril.
So we're out of here. This has been Stefan. We'll catch you on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight because things tend to get spooky when you're listening to Fearscape. So we'll catch you guys later. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I'm so glad you were able to join us for that horrifying discussion. I hope they didn't frighten you too much. Tune in next week for even more research into the nightmarish and haunting creeps and spooks that we tell ourselves don't exist, but we know they do. Make sure you have your blankets, that you hold them extra tight. Next time on Fearscape. Ha 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 ha!